SBS Radio.
Matthew, welcome to NITV Radio.
Thank you very much for having me here again.
Yeah.
Bertrand, for our episode 7 of Tell Me Law.
Yeah, an episode that comes at a time when we've just gone through and we are still going through really devastating bushfires, even though the situation is kind of improving with the rainfall, and the fires are in majority being contained. But one very important thing: the legal implications of these fires, as far as insurance is concerned, and for First Nations people. Now, let's talk about this topic today.
Yes, I think it's an excellent topic. I'm really hoping that some of those people that have unfortunately lost through the bushfires can gain some helpful information and understanding, perhaps, insofar as their insurance goes. It's definitely a very topical piece, I think, and I think people will find a lot of use out of this information. I mean, there's obviously people that don't have insurance. There's a lot of people in the remote communities that didn't take out the insurance, and hopefully, though, if we have listeners that do have insurance policies, this information will be very, very useful for them.
Is there insurance which is applicable for loss and damage caused by the bushfires? That's the first thing I should have asked.
There's obviously a number of different types of insurance policies, but there is definitely insurances that are applicable for the loss and damage that are caused by bushfires. For example, home and contents insurance is the first one that comes to mind. Interestingly, though, often in insurance policies, there can be a clause that says that acts of God aren't, in fact, insured. So it does depend on the insurance policy. But in these circumstances, hopefully, most insurers do the right thing and actually cover the people that have lost their homes and their valuable possessions.
You talked about the acts of God. I can remember a few years back with the floods, some insurance clauses included a clause that had very different definitions of flooding, and some people were insured for flooding only if they lived above a certain level in their buildings, and others, if it was caused by a river overflowing, it wasn't covered, whereas if it was caused by tap water in their residences. So it's a minefield out there with the different policies and different definitions that could apply.
Most definitely, there's a lot of case law about what an act of God actually is. I think in these situations, there's been some reports that have indicated that I think only a very, very small percentage of the bushfires were by arsonists. Most of them were initiated by lightning strikes. That's what I've seen in some of the media publications. If that's the case, then acts of God does definitely become tricky, but it depends on the insurance policy itself that was taken out. It also depends on the decision maker within the insurance company as to whether or not the acts of God limitation or the acts of God exclusion will apply in the particular instance.
Yeah. Supposing you're insured and your clause does cover bushfires, can you start making repairs to your property before the insurance company gets involved? When do you get to start, and when does the assessor step in to actually getting things started or oversee the repairs? How does it work?
That's a good question, Bertrand, because most people, if they can, would like to try and get their property back to the condition that it was before the fires caused such damage. There can be that real sense of urgency that, you know, the person wants to go out there and start doing whatever repairs they can. But really, it is best if the insurance company actually comes out and does the assessment before any repairs are done. It's also the case that insurance companies themselves, most of the time, want to come out and see the actual damage in its initial state, in its original condition, to be able to make their proper assessment. And you don't want to interfere with their process. That means that it's often best to wait until the insurer actually comes out and has their assessor look at the damage properly before making any of those repairs and fixing up the damage that's been caused. Because you don't want to interfere with the process of the insurance company, and you don't want to do anything that could otherwise result in the claim itself being rejected.
sometimes there are conditions where, for instance, you have to secure the property to make it, even make the initial repairs. Let's say if there's a roof that's hanging out there, beams hanging, and you need to secure those before you can, even the assessor, before the assessor gets in, for their own safety. So I believe those do insurance companies take into account that kind of repair just to get the site safe, to make it safe?
Exactly. So it is, a lot of what we're discussing today, Bertrand, also comes down to the policy itself. There's a lot of insurance policies that have conditions that require reasonable steps to be taken to prevent further damage, particularly after a natural disaster. The issue is, what are reasonable steps and what are steps that would interfere with the assessment of loss and damage? So there is a bit of a judgment call. But yes, if there's something like, putting some coverage over a damaged roof, say, to prevent any further damage to the internal dimensions of the property, well, that would most often be considered reasonable. So there is a judgment call, and it is actually really, really important for the homeowner to understand their insurance policy, the requirements, and also contact the insurance company to ask them, because this does really come down to an individual case-by-case assessment. So if there's any doubt as to whether or not repairs should be done, whether it's going to interfere with the insurance process, or if it's going to result in being something that's beyond reasonable steps, then most definitely contact the insurer and ask them, can you do that particular piece of work? And they'll let you know.
What can I do if, for instance, I've lost my insurance policy, or if it was burned? What do we do if we have to make a claim and we don't have a copy of the policy?
And that's something that is a sensible kind of scenario, because when people have lost all of their property, their home's gone up in flames, then it's likely that the insurance policy has gone up in flames as well, particularly if it was stored at home in a hard copy format. The first point is that you can still claim if you lost the insurance policy. You can even look online to see if the insurance policy itself is on your insurer's website. If it's not on the website, or if you can't access the insurer's website, you can always contact your insurer and ask your insurer to provide you with another copy of the insurance policy. The good news is, even if the hard copy insurance policy has gone up in flames, our technology means that it will probably be online. And even if it's not, you can, yes, definitely get another one. And you have a right to get another copy of your insurance policy as well. If you've taken one out, the insurer needs to make sure that you've actually got the policy in place so that you can comply with the obligations.
And is there anything I should do before making any insurance claim? For instance, how can I maximize my chances of getting full coverage?
That really comes down to understanding. Well, first of all, it comes down to making sure that the right insurance was taken out in the first place. Because if you don't have the right insurance taken out in the first place, well, then the full coverage of the loss probably won't be within the scope of that insurance policy. So, for example, the cap limit of the insurer of the insurance policy needs to be sufficient for your home and its contents if it's been burnt down and you've suffered loss as a result of fire. The other thing you need to do is be very clear in terms of your own obligations, the insurer's obligations, the assessment process, the criteria for the assessment, and really the policy itself. Because as you go through the insurance policy, it sets out all of the legal requirements, including the insurance claim process. Now, to maximise your chances as a person wanting to benefit and actually claim under that insurance policy, you need to dot every I and cross every T, meaning compliance with each of the obligations is paramount. And if you have any questions about any of those obligations as you go through, you can always speak with your insurer, and you can also seek independent legal advice, because sometimes those obligations can be a little bit trickier to understand. So, for example, we were speaking about the notion earlier of reasonable repairs. Reasonable itself is a notion that's used in a lot of the obligations in insurance policies, and sometimes it's difficult to understand exactly what does reasonable mean. reasonable does have a grey area, right?
Yeah.
There's a grey area in what is reasonable and what is not reasonable. What can you do and can't do? So being real clear with your insurance policy makes a lot of sense.
What am I supposed to do if I didn't take out insurance before the fire struck, or if just my policy doesn't cover fire?
If you didn't take out the insurance before fire struck, then you're in a real unfortunate position, because then obviously you've lost valuable property. But it's just the beginning, because people have lost family members and pets. If you didn't take out the insurance before the fire struck, there's a number of recourses. The first obvious recourse, very unfortunate, is you can't claim and you have to bear the loss in your own right. There's other ways. For example, there's community fundraising that's available. There's online community fundraising portals that are available these days as well, where you can reach out and ask community to support you in the circumstances. In some instances, for example, farmers have got, there's been a government decision where farmers are entitled to grant funding. The hopeful outcome, if you didn't take out insurance and you've been struck by fire and you want to claim for property loss and damage, is to see what other finance might be available, whether it be through community grant funding or some other kind of community or financial scheme, to then enable you to finance the rebuilding of your property that's been lost as a result of fire.
Fire is just the beginning of a series of misfortunes. And when you spoke about grants, I can think about some people who might not know how to fill out a grant application. It's not a straightforward thing.
That's right. It's definitely not a straightforward thing, filling out a grant application. From the work that we've done, we've advised clients and written grant applications for clients, because grants have, some complex terms and conditions of their own. And sometimes getting advice on the actual grant is important to ensure the success of the grant.
We said if your insurance, for instance, doesn't cover fire, but if it does and your insurance is not providing adequate compensation, how can you challenge the insurer?
The first thing on that is the insurance policy itself will have a dispute resolution process. It's a matter of, if the insurance has been refused, going through the dispute resolution process in the actual policy. The process will set out notification requirements, what to include in terms of the information that you need to provide in challenging the insurer, and also time limitations, meaning the period of time in which you need to respond to any additional queries, and also the times in which the insurance company needs to come back to you and give you their request for any additional information or response and overall outcome to the dispute itself based on their decision. If the insurance company still does not comply or provide the insurance that you're seeking and that you believe should be provided under the policy, there's a number of other recourses that might be available. For example, you can go to the Financial Security Ombudsman and you can seek their intervention so that the Ombudsman can assist in the determination to enable your insurance policy to cover your loss. If you don't have the insurance that you thought you would have, for example, at the time of purchasing the insurance, you might have been given some information that wasn't appropriate, then there could be some non-compliance with the financial services obligations of the insurer, meaning ASIC, the Australian Securities and Investments Commission, might be the appropriate forum for you to go. Or alternatively, the ACCC, in terms of misrepresentation or any omission of information and other breaches that could have arisen as a result of the conduct of the insurers or the agent's communications with you at the time of taking out your insurance policy. You can definitely seek that government intervention, and hopefully there you can have the insurer cover your loss if the obligation is imposed on them. Another alternative is, of course, seeking a court decision and judgment and commencing proceedings against the insurance company to then have court orders so that your loss is covered. There's a number of ways in which you can definitely still have a overall outcome that is different to the initial decision of the insurer. But again, it does come down to getting things right in the beginning. They say that the foundations of anything is so important, and it's exactly the same with the insurance obligations and insurance requirements. You need to make sure that you've had the right insurance taken out in the first place, and it really is a matter of spending that time and having the policy that you need before that loss or fire occurs. And sometimes, Bertrand, that can be a bit tricky for people because nobody knew that we're going to have the bushfires that we're experiencing.
One last question, because I realize in this episode we could talk forever, because it also requires not just understanding some legal matters, but also having a little bit of knowledge in financial literacy. But before I let you go, just quickly, can you explain to us who is the Australian Financial Complaints Authority and what do they do?
Most definitely. So the Australian Financial Complaints Authority, you can actually check out their website. It's afca.org.au. And what they do is they give consumers and small businesses an independent dispute resolution process for financial complaints. They can consider complaints about insurance as well as, you know, other areas of financial complaints. So that's a great tie-in to the previous question about where can you go if the insurance company doesn't actually honour its policy and you haven't had any luck going through their own dispute resolution process. The Australian Financial Complaints Authority is another third party that can step in and they can hear the disputes and complaints about, you know, the bushfire insurance, and they also provide a particular bushfire disaster support process, and they provide information through their website on that. So it's a really, really important place to go if you do have a complaint about, you know, about your insurance in connection with the bushfires.
And maybe one topic we can talk about is for those in remote communities where they don't have necessarily access to the same set of infrastructure, legal advice, and things that we enjoy in the big cities.
I would just like to pay some honour, respect, and perhaps share some awareness for our Indigenous communities and remote Indigenous communities in particular that have suffered such loss through the bushfires, because, you know, as we're going through this difficult time, and it's extremely difficult for everybody, I feel a greater sense of loss for the particular grief that our First Nation people are suffering. The land itself has been damaged to such a great extent, and the grief that's already been suffered. In some ways, the fires have highlighted and inflicted some more pain in terms of the loss of land and that loss of connection in the land as it sits with the culture of our Indigenous people, because the land itself now is in a severely damaged state. One of the good things, though, is our Indigenous people are being looked upon, including by government, for the purposes of restoration. And through this time, I think that our Indigenous people have a very strong part to play, not only now, but also in the future rebuilding of the land that's been damaged by fire. So I'd like to just pay some gratitude to our people and also respect and honour any experience that's currently taking place.
Want to hear more stories like this? Listen on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.